We're happy to welcome back in this second hour of Focus 580, Rich Warren, who writes about consumer electronics, particularly audio and video, although has interested in and has gotten into other areas, things like cameras and computers, because it's all kind of coming together now. He writes a regular column for our paper here, the Champaign-Urbana News Gazette, and also has contributed to major audio-video national publications. And every once in a while, he's here and we talk a little bit about what's new in consumer electronics. And it indeed seems that there is always something new. Things are changing all of the time. And for consumers, it can be pretty confusing. And the idea here is we try to help you out if you have questions. Maybe you're thinking about buying a new piece of equipment and you're bewildered by the choices and you want to know, well, how do I think about this? What questions do I ask when I go into the place? And maybe what features really matter and what features can I live without? Those sorts of questions. We'd be very happy to take your call. All you have to do is call us, 333-9455. And toll-free, 800-222-9455. We'll take as many folks as we can. Welcome back.
Thanks. Great to be here.
One of the things, just in chatting before we got going, you said that digital audio tape. Now, we have some of these machines here around our station, and there may be people have them in their homes for home recording. You're saying DAT is dead.
Yes, it's going away. I just learned from an engineer friend of mine.
Brian Wagner, our engineer, is cheering.
For good reason, because it's a really failed format. And an engineer friend of mine emailed me the other day saying that he has heard from the Alps Corporation in Japan that makes most of the drives for DAT machines. No matter what the brand name, Alps probably made a good chunk of the drive. They're going to discontinue audio-video drives or audio drives for DAT machines. And they have about a 2 to 3 year stockpile in the warehouse. And when those are gone, they're gone. And you can pretty much expect about the same time that the tape will start going away too. Mm-hmm. And when you look at it, it's really a format that has no reason to exist because it suffers all the inherent problems of any tape format, is that you can't have true random access. You know, you've got to spool the tape, run the tape back and forth, and it's fragile. It's every bit as fragile as an analog cassette or any other kind of tape. And it never caught on, which means you can only play it basically in your home. Sony made some portables. I guess they may have still have one in their catalog. But it wasn't a universal format. You can't run over to a friend's house and play your DAT tape unless your friend is equally deranged as you to have bought one. And, you know, I can say this because I own two of them, and plus a portable. So the whole format, compared to CDR, which is so elegant and so universal because when you make a CDR, it'll play anywhere. The discs are now down to about 50 cents a piece for computer discs and about a dollar some odd a piece for home recordable discs, whereas DAT tapes are somewhere north of $5 a tape. And that's not cheap. And when you consider, you know, media these days is very cheap most of the time. I mean, you can buy a VHS tape for a couple of bucks. So, you know, DAT is really a dying format. The other thing I want to talk about before we take the first call is that the true fusion, the true melding of computers and home audio video is really upon us because I was at the Bose Corporation last week and they've introduced an amazing new product that looks like an ordinary wave radio, and that wave radio is so popular, a very svelte, good-looking radio that gets good reception and really great fidelity. Well, they put a few extra chips inside the wave radio and came up with some software they wrote that allows the wave radio to work with your computer as your computer sound system. And it will also work as a tuner for internet radio. So from the wave radio, you can press the presets on the remote control and tune internet stations, of course, when your computer is on. But without disrupting the work you may do, and you can be calculating a spreadsheet or writing a document in your word processor, and it seamlessly changes stations without bringing up another screen on your computer interrupting your work. And similarly, though, you can go on your computer screen and change the stations on the wave radio, the AM/FM stations that you're listening to. It still has a tuner built in. And also, the wave radio will play CDs from your computer, you know, from the computer CD-ROM drive. So it's very versatile. Also, the software will rip MP3s. You can put your CD in, and it'll make an MP3 file from the CD or a WAV file to store on your hard drive. Very versatile. So you get the sound of the WAV radio. Also, when the computer's off, the WAV radio acts like a normal table radio, tuning AM and FM. And also, you can use the software on your computer with the WAV radio turned off. Say you have a laptop and you're away from the radio. You can still use the software to rip MP3 files and to tune internet radio stations without the WAV radio being connected. So it's kind of a neat product. And it's only about $150 more than the basic wave radio. So there's, and also since it's so small, you won't be cluttering your desktop with huge computer speakers and you'll still get great fidelity. Mm-hmm. So there's one of the examples of how computers and regular consumer electronics are coming together. Personally, I finally went out and bought a high-quality amplifier, two very nice B&W speakers, and plugged them into the audio outputs of my PC, and I get really remarkable fidelity. I mean, your PC is a true high-fidelity component, and there's no reason why you can't plug a PC into a $10,000 sound system and hear great sound, depending on your source. I mean, you need a good sound card or a good, if you have a USB output going into a, some of the new receivers have USB input, so they'll do the digital to analog decoding instead of the computer. And so you can use the CD-ROM drive in your computer and also internet radio. The quality of internet radio over the past year has improved dramatically. I know I occasionally listen to my own program, The Midnight Special, over the internet. And I must say that during the live stream, the fidelity used to leave something to be desired on Saturday nights. But now I tuned in last Saturday night. It sounded really good. And I was shocked because, I mean, the evolution of the quality of internet streaming, the algorithms that Real Audio uses and the Microsoft, the comparable Microsoft program, have really improved to make better use of the limited bandwidth. So even if you don't have a cable modem or DSL, you can still get great fidelity now. And if you have a cable modem or DSL, then you can get true FM radio fidelity or even better. So there's no reason why you shouldn't connect your computer to a first. You don't have to go out and buy one of those dreadful little computer sound systems that you get at the store, you know, a little box of speakers and all this. You don't need that. You can connect it to a high fidelity system, a true stereo system, and get true great sound. So that's the other thing I wanted to mention. I also, sometime during the hour, want to go back to high-definition digital television.
Oh, yes.
Because that's a topic that is going to be increasingly interesting or maybe uninteresting in the next couple of years.
All right. Our guest this morning is Rich Warren. He writes about consumer audio, video, some other kinds of consumer electronics for the News Gazette and other publications. And occasionally he's here and we talk about what's new in consumer electronics. Your questions are certainly welcome. We have one caller and we'll get right to them. Others are welcome to call in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Here's caller in Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I'm embarrassed to call somebody like you on this subject. My television I need to replace because it doesn't take in, it scrambles all the local stations, and I wonder how much I should put into a new television. Should I go into the digital? Should I? What do you suggest? This is embarrassing for me because you're dealing with such high-tech stuff.
Oh, no, it shouldn't be embarrassing, and that's more important, your problem, than what I've been discussing. You can get a phenomenally good television these days for from $400 to $500. Big screen, 27-inch TV, good quality, all the inputs you need for cable, etc. And that's what I recommend. At this point, for the average person to go out and spend, even though some digital TVs have come down to the $2,000 to $3,000 price range without the high-definition adapters, the digital receiver part of it, I think that's still kind of pricey for the average person. And there is some confusion, even in the industry, about how hard the FCC and Congress are going to push to make this digital TV a reality. It's more politics and technical, but there are technical issues as well. So in your case, I would suggest getting a nice 27-inch TV, if that's the screen size you'd like, for $400 to $500, and a lot of companies make good ones. I think Toshiba's got a great one, Panasonic, and some of the probably the better RCA Pro scans. And you'll be very happy with that. And when, if and when digital TV really does happen, 4 or 5 years from now, in this market at least, you'll be able to go out and buy a $300 adapter that plugs in and brings the digital signal into these sets and will give you a very good picture, even better than you're getting with conventional broadcaster today's cable. So I would choose a set that has as many different kinds of inputs as possible for these future adapters, such as not only an S input, but even perhaps paying a little extra and getting the separate color inputs. You'll see them labeled with some strange symbols, but there'll be three jacks in the back with different colors on them for three separate color inputs, which is the new standard for a component video, as they call it. But even that doesn't add much to the cost of the TV. So, you know, you can still get a great set in a reasonable price, and that's as high as I'd go right now. I wouldn't go out and buy a deluxe conventional set for $900 or $1,000 because then I'd be worried about obsolescence. But a good $500 TV I would have no fear of buying today.
And tell me again, a couple that you mentioned. I heard Panasonic and I heard...
I have a soft spot for Toshiba, and Panasonic has always made a good set as far as reliability. And even some of the RCA ProScan models, which is kind of a step up from the basic RCA models. Those are all good sets. Sony makes a good set, but I think it's somewhat overpriced these days. Sony seems to get a $100 premium for its sets, and I'm not sure it's worth it. They're very expensive sets, are very good, but I'd be very happy with either Toshiba or Panasonic at this point in time.
Thank you, dear heart.
All right. Thanks for the call. Other Bye. Questions are welcome of any nature, maybe particularly if you're thinking about buying something new, a DVD or a VCR or a TV or whatever. And if you're confused, and believe me, I understand that it can be very confusing, give us a call and we can see if we can help you out. 333-WILL, toll-free 800-222-WILL. Here's another caller on the campus. This is line number two.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
I just bought an SACD player, and I'm wondering what your opinion is of this. I'm incredibly impressed, not only with SACDs, but with what this player does for regular CDs. And I'm curious about your opinion regarding the future of CDs and, in particular, SACDs, perhaps versus their DVD audio and the other formats that are available right now. I'll hang up and listen.
Oh, I'm so glad you asked that question. I wanted to talk about that, and now that somebody asked about it, I can spend some time talking about it.
Good.
So, first of all, SACD is probably the best possible audio format that's come down the pike yet. It's called Super Audio CD. It's developed by Sony and Philips, and it throws away all previous encoding technology. It doesn't use the pulse code modulation that CD uses to encode analog into digital. It uses something called direct stream digital, which is a much more eloquent, better way to do it. And it's a remarkable format. And this gentleman is right. It sounds fabulous. Probably sounds a little bit better than DVD audio. A lot of people argue back and forth. No, DVD audio sounds better. But from what I've heard, SACD is probably, I would think, somewhat better sounding than DVD audio, though they're very close. DVD audio uses a more conventional encoding and simply gives you 24. You can have 24 bits and instead of the usual 16, and wider, bigger sampling rate, larger sampling rate. So theoretically, you get better fidelity, and you do. I mean, there is more openness to the sound. Now for the bad news, the electronics industry keeps doing this, and it's so foolhardy. They always have two competing systems. We dodged that bullet with DVD video by a month. I mean, they were going to have two different DVD video systems. And finally, both sides caved in and said, okay, we're going to sit down and take the best of Sony system versus everybody else. And we got DVD, which is great. And it succeeded because the public knew that there's only one DVD and they can buy it without fear of, obsolescence, unlike Beta and VHS. Right now, we have DVD audio and SACD, which is VHS and Beta all over again. And my prediction, and I hope I'm wrong, but that both systems are going to fail. It's as simple as that. First of all, I'd say at least 75% of the public doesn't care about better fidelity, which is proven out by how many younger people are into MP3. MP3 has fidelity inferior to CD, even at its best, mm-hmm. and it's taken off like wildfire. Now we have these two systems that definitely sound better than CD, at least to people who truly care on well-recorded material. I mean, I'm not sure you're really, Neil Young says he just loves DVD audio and that, he could never stand CD. On his music, I'm not sure you could hear the difference, considering how much distortion he deliberately generates sometimes and some of the things he has recorded. In any event, I'm not sure the public wants to pay the premium price for the discs. I mean, at least the players at Sony is now selling SACD for $400 player, which is amazing considering a year ago it was $4,000. And DVD audio is down below $1,000 now. And that'll certainly come down in price to compete with the Sony SACD. But once again, you have Sony and Philips versus the world, basically, because all the other companies are supporting DVD audio, largely like Machista, which is Panasonic, is behind DVD audio. And they're an awfully powerful company as well, and several other companies on their side. So it's a very strange. Now, Pioneer has a $3,000 player that plays both. Solves the problem, plays anything you can put on it, it plays it. It's wonderful. I mean, it plays every kind of CD and DVD and DVD audio. But it's also kind of pricey. Mm-hmm. And the other issue with DVD audio is whether it'll be... there are now going to be DVD recorders, and we have four different DVD recording systems because nobody can come to terms agreeing. Actually, three main ones and a fourth dark horse. So I think it's sad that I think CD is probably going to survive simply because it's the best we've got. It's cheap. You know, the other thing that really galls me is to go into the store now and see $16 and $17 CDs in the rack. When even after the seven cent per song artist royalty and all the shipping costs, and it's still only costing them $5 to make the darn thing. And they're selling it for $17. And to me, that's just outrageous. So I think CD will be around for a while. I think MP3 will continue to be a very popular format for storing stuff on your computer, for certain kinds of portables. Nice thing about MP3, of course, is if you put on a memory card, you can jog with it, where it's harder to jog with a portable CD player. But then we have to have this. Now they're talking about putting MP3 on a CD disc, so you can fit 10 hours of sound on a single CD disc, so you can play it in the car. You can go for a whole trip in one disc with your favorite tunes. It's a brave new world out there. The one thing I will say is that I don't believe that existing CD is going to become obsolete, especially with the popularity of CD recorders. And since DAT is going away, the only true digital recording system for the home that makes any sense is CD recordable, CDR, which is cheap, easy to use, and universal because it can play it anywhere. So I don't think CD is going to go away soon. But whether DVD audio or SACD take off, I think they're both long shots at this point because they're not enough the public appreciates. There are benefits. And plus, the first software is costing $20 to $25, and nobody wants to pay that, you know, at the $10 or $8 premium over existing CDs.
Let's take another caller here. Let's go to Eureka. This is line number 4. Hello.
Hello. I'm interested in CD players. First of all, do you have any recommendations on? I've seen quite a few of them, and I had one for a couple of years, and I like a CD portable player that's in sort of a dual audio cassette, radio, and boombox.
Well, I don't keep track of boomboxes too much, so I can't make any recommendations there. As far as CD portables, there are only really three companies I like as far as portable CD players, and that's Sony, Iowa, and Panasonic.
I see.
They seem to make the widest variety. Most companies really, I think there's one factory in China that makes them all these days,
all right,
except for the Panasonics. Panasonic still makes some of theirs in Japan, but everybody else seems to come from the same factory in China. So whether you're buying one that says Magnavox or Philips or whatever, RCA or GE, or they're all from the same darn factory, basically.
Sort of like VCRs, eh?
Yeah, and Sony offers the widest variety of portable CD players with a wide variety of features. Panasonic has a fair number, and Panasonics are pretty durable.
Mm-hmm.
They can take quite a beating. That's what I like about the stuff they make.
I know you seem to recommend Panasonic in the general consumer line because of being the most reliable and long-lasting.
Yeah, on the attitude of the company, I mean, I've seen their factories in Japan, and they have resisted, to a large extent, sourcing things out to China. They think that they can make it in automated factories in Japan and keep the cost down. I've seen some of these automated factories, which are mind-boggling. I mean, now we're in the 21st century, and believe me, these factories were ahead of their time 10 years ago. And they really seem to know what they're doing when it comes to manufacturing techniques, where so many of the other companies just said, well, let's just use cheap labor and farm it out to China or some other country where they pay people 10 cents an hour for their wages.
I would just assume that this would hold true for a CD player. You'd put in a rack stereo system, too, that Sony and Iowa and Panasonic would be your recommendations in terms of general quality.
Well, in that case, I think Pioneer makes a pretty decent one. Onkyo, Denon makes an excellent one for a home system.
Could you repeat the last one you said?
Denon is Denon. It's a smaller company, but they have slightly higher standards than some of their competitors. They tend to be more of an audiophile line. Marantz makes an excellent one. Marantz.
How do you spell that?
Marantz. They were owned partially by Philips. Now they're independent, and they're a Japanese-based company that, again, goes for the higher end of the audio scale and generally makes some very good equipment.
You said the second one after Pioneer was Onkyo.
Oh, Onkyo, O-N-K-Y-O.
O-N-K-Y-O.
Yeah, they make a pretty decent product.
Okay.
Not as reliable as perhaps the Technics, which is a Panasonic line, basically, but good sounding.
Let me ask one more question, please.
Sure.
Would you have any recommendations on recent changes in VCRs in terms of quality or features or anything that's better or best?
Well, the only one thing you want to make sure of is you buy a hi-fi VCR, which are most of the VCRs now are hi-fi. Mm-hmm. As far as quality, frankly, they've all sort of become junk. The manufacturers look at them as non-repairable, replaceable items, and so spending over $200 on a VCR is kind of foolhardy unless you want certain features. And the quality, I've been using a Toshiba for 3-4 years now. I've been very happy with it. Sony's picture quality is very high, but the reliability isn't perhaps as good as either Toshiba or Panasonic. You can actually check Consumer Reports. That may contradict me, but Consumer Reports keeps pretty good tabs on what works and what doesn't. You'll see some brands certainly at the bottom of the scale. And that's about, you know, I don't ordinarily believe in Consumer Reports because sometimes they get things, as far as I'm concerned, kind of wrong. Uh-huh. But when the reliability ratings are usually pretty accurate, and I'd recommend just looking there because most VCRs, the quality differences now are really minimal. Again, one or two companies make all the chips. One or two companies make all the drives, and they just slap them together, basically.
I know. I found my best luck. I usually get a 4-year warranty contract with Best Buy, and that's probably considering what. And I know you've heard. I've heard you a number of times say about what they cost, but that serves me best. Thank you.
All right. Thanks. Just for a second, and I have a couple of other callers, and I promise we won't make these people wait forever. I do want to hear you talk just a little bit about home video recording and where things are headed, because it seems as if what we're doing is we're going away from tape and we're going to something that would be essentially like a computer hard drive that has, in fact, many advantages for the ways that you can program it as a kind of thing that that's a no moving parts kind of way for when you want to record ER or, you know, whatever you're recording off television to watch at a later time. How long do you think it's going to be before that really takes hold, and then we really will say probably for home recording, tape's going to be gone?
Well, the industry prediction is by the year 2005, VHS or VCRs will be history.
Well, that's only in another couple of years.
4 years, yeah. 3 years. I think that PVRs, as they're called, personal video recorders, which use a computer hard drive, the only drawback to those is that they come with a catch, is that they only work properly when you subscribe to the data service that programs them.
Uh-huh.
Now, of course, when you buy the ones that are supported by Replay, which is mainly Panasonic and a couple of others, it's built into the purchase price. So you buy the unit for $500, and you get a lifetime of this data service. When you buy a TiVo system, you have to pay a monthly fee or a yearly fee, unless you pay an exorbitant amount over the purchase price to buy a lifetime. And then if you change units, the unit breaks down, that's the unit's lifetime, not your lifetime. You got a problem there. These are far superior to VCRs as far as convenience, as far as recording quality. If you use, they're better. You get 2 or 3 different levels of recording quality on these units. When they say 60 hours of recording, which they can do now, that's at below the slow speed of VHS quality. But the 30-hour mode, the quality is pretty good. And if you go down to like the 20-hour mode, it's better, much better than VHS. So you have your choice of quality, and the versatility is great. And, of course, the TV companies love it. The motion picture studios love it because you can't take – there's no removable media, so they control the copyright. You can't – they can make it so you can't copy out of these units to a VCR if they want, and they do. And so they will at some point make units that combine one of these with a DVD recorder, but it'll be very copyright controlled, so you won't be able to – steal anything, but that's the future. Also, these PVRs will be built into television sets. It's good. It's a coming thing is they will be part of the TV. There's no reason why they should be a separate box. They only take up a few square inches. If anybody's seen the latest computer hard drives, they're tiny. And Seagate is cranking out these drives, and a couple other companies are making them for these PVRs. And it's a wonderful product, really. When you stop to think about it, the versatility of being able to pause the unit, go to the refrigerator to get a beer, or answer a telephone call, or make a pit stop or whatever, and then continue watching from where you left off while the unit continues to record the rest of the program, and also be able to skip commercials, although Replay is better for skipping commercials because the studios and the TV networks got major investments into TiVo. And so TiVo is much harder to skip the commercials. You can't just push one button and have it skip 30 seconds or 60 seconds forward. You have to actually fast forward like you do on a VCR. So it's not quite as convenient because they made sure of that. The original TiVo had that skip feature where you could just push a button and it skipped the commercial. Mm. The current ones, you just have to fast forward. So you have to still see the commercial, you see.
Okay. We have some other callers. Our guest is Rich Warren. He writes about consumer electronics for the Champaign-Urbana News Gazette, has also written for Stereo Review and other national audio-video publications, and occasionally he's here. We talk about what's new in the way of consumer electronics, and if you have questions, you can give us a call. I know he'll do his best to answer. 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Back to the phones here, and Chicago is next, line one. Hello.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Yes.
I have, and commenting on the personal video recorder, the digital video recorder, as they call it now, I don't see that replacing the VCR as long as you can only get 20 or 30 hours on there, where you have to, you know, once it's full, you've got to transfer it over to tape anyway. So until they can improve on that, I don't see it replacing the VCR, even though it might be better quality recording. I just want to get Rich's comment on that.
Well, Fred, the industry doesn't agree with you. These people don't do things by accident. And they also, first of all, in a couple of years, these units will store 120 hours of video easily.
Well, that's different, yeah.
Because it won't cost anymore. I mean, there are terabyte hard drives going to the computers now. And so these will trickle down. Yeah, right now they cost a lot of money, but in a year or two these will trickle down into the mainstream. Because
well, if you get 120 hours, that's not bad. But still, you still have to erase it after you got a certain amount, though, right?
Yeah, you know, I've discovered I've recorded a lot of videotapes and then never had time to watch them and end up forgetting what's on them. The nice thing about these drives, by the way, is that they do keep track of what you've recorded. They give you a screen of everything you've recorded by name. You don't have to go look and put the tape in and push play and fast forward. And it knows what it's recorded. It keeps a data label on each recording. So it'll say ER and the date, whatever.
How long will that keep on your hard drive? Will it keep forever or will it eventually you'll have to...
Theoretically, the magnetic pulses on the hard drive should last for a long time. I mean, most computers can store data for years and years and years before the hard drive goes bad. And I would suspect that without abuse or huge magnetic fields nearby, that it'll 10 years, 20 years, you know, it shouldn't be a problem.
Well, I think when they get the DVD recorder built into it, then you'll be all set because you can transfer it from your hard drive to your disk.
Yeah, something that you think that The Sopranos is the greatest thing ever, and you want to have your own collection, then you can make yourself a copy that you can.
Another thing, and then I'll let someone else get on. I was switching the TV the other day. I was watching one of the articles, and they had some college students have large bandwidth. Now don't ask me to explain it because I don't know what it is. But these guys were downloading and trading movies over the internet. Are we going to see more and more of that? Is that why they're interested in the? Is that why you see Jack Valenti talking about Napster and this type of thing?
Oh, absolutely. There is. It's a brave new world we're about to enter. And in fact, we're all going to be losers because the movie studios and the TV networks and the content producers and the content providers have woken up. And they are going to have the laws changed. Believe me, the copyright laws are going to be changed.
I imagine so, yeah.
And we're not going to own or be able to store anything that we see unless we pay for it. Nothing going to be free. Now, of course, some hacker is always going to find a code that breaks the copy protection of some of this stuff, but it's going to become a crime to do that, and you're going to find it very difficult to download anything from the internet for free, unless they want you to.
These guys were trading movies, and I just wondered if they're scared to death of that, or if that's what they're...
Oh, they're more than scared to death of it. That's why DVD recordable is taking so long. It's not merely a technical issue. It's also a political copyright issue. And the things are changing. And we're going to see in 4 or 5 years when all this technology is available that legal issues are going to be much more to the forefront than the technology.
Okay, now I just one more and then I'll get off the air. I'll shut up. You used to be able to listen to baseball over the internet for free. I understand now that's going to cost. Do you know anything about that?
That's right. The major leagues have decided that they're going to charge for baseball broadcasts.
Is that per team or is it for the whole?
It's very inexpensive. It's like $10 per season, and you can choose any number of games. But it means that stations that broadcast on the internet, like if they're broadcasting the White Sox, cannot feed that to the internet. There'll be a 3-hour silence during that ball game, or they'll fill it with something else. But so the local stations broadcasting baseball will not be able to put that on the internet.
So in other words, if you pay $10, you have to choose the amount of games you want to listen to.
No, I think it's a blanket agreement. If you pay Major League Baseball $10, you get some sort of code for your computer, and you can they provide the games from the feeds of the local radio stations through their site, and you choose which one you want to hear. So you can hear the Tigers or the Cardinals or the Cubs, but you can go to their site and choose which one you want to hear.
But it's not free anymore.
No.
Because I know here in Chicago, WGN used to be very proud of the fact that they would get letters from Wyoming and Nebraska and Thailand and Berlin, and now they can't do that. So.
Well, at least you can sell some of the radio for free if you hear the commercials. So.
But you know what galls me about that is now they're collecting all those games twice because the sponsors pay for that stuff.
Well, if there's a dollar to be made in America, that's the capitalist system will take care of it.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, let's go to back here to Urbana for someone else. Line two. Hello.
Hi there.
Yes.
I hope this isn't too far off topic. Let me know if it is, and I'll go away. I live out in the country and have a 10-foot C-band dish, the receiver of which died unceremoniously a week or two ago.
Would you like my old one? I've got a spare one to give away.
I don't think I could probably get a nickel for it on eBay. But so this raises the question of should we kiss the big dish goodbye and join the rest of the world with an 18-inch dish, or there is one new option, which is this 4D TV system that I guess Motorola now has taken over, which extends some of the capability of C-band. We are not heavy KU-band, wild feed kind of fanatics. We just want TV service beyond the local off-air networks. I just wondered what you might have to say about the choice between going to an 18-inch dish and the kind of subscription service that way, or trying this new 4D TV, which is quite an expensive unit. They don't give it away the way they give away the 18-inch dish hardware. Any thoughts on that?
Well, I would not go to the 4D. It's a system that's not likely to receive wide acceptance. And knowing Motorola, they just drop things. They don't make a profit. They're out of it. You know, they've seemed to have the kiss of death lately in everything they've gone into. And ask all the people in Harvard, Illinois about that. Anyway, either I would look for a cheap used C-band receiver to use with your dish since you already have the dish set up, or go to one of the 18-inch systems. I don't know what the subscription prices are on C-band versus what Dish Network and DirecTV charge.
A little lower.
But if you... You know, I have a big C-band dish and a receiver, too, which I haven't used in ages because it's much more convenient to use the 18-inch. It's trouble-free. You don't have to worry about moving the dish or aiming the dish. And now that there are 200 channels available either on Dish Network or DirecTV, you're not really losing much leaving C-band other than some of the NASA feeds and things like that, which now are available even on DirecTV on occasion. So you've kind of got a choice. I mean, even if you go out and buy a used satellite receiver for $100, that's only probably what you could pay for a C-band system. I mean, pardon me, a DirecTV system when they discount, when you buy the 3 years of service and they give you the receiver.
Have you noticed any difference in the picture quality between what you get, the analog signals off the big dish and the digital off, which is sort of a secondary feed, obviously, off the smaller dish? There's certain C-band fanatics claim that there's better quality off the big dish.
Well, C-band can theoretically be better. Also, it's not as subject to weather problems. That is, if you have a heavy cloud cover or a snowstorm, because you've got a 10-foot dish sitting out there, you're picking up a lot more signal, and so you don't get rain fade, things like that. The 18-inch dish depends on the programming. I've had both, and some of the programming, depending on how they receive it and uplink it, can be actually better quality on the little dish, depending on the programming and how they've received it. I know they were working at one point to get fiber optic feeds to some of the programming rather than taking them from with a C-band dish from satellite. But you have to remember that when they downlink it from satellite, even though you're getting the second generation on the DirecTV or Dish Network, they're using dishes that are 30 feet in diameter. So they're getting every bit of signal that's available from the satellite before they send it back up to their satellite. So you're not losing a lot, and it all depends on a particular specific channel that you're watching, whether the quality is better or worse on digital 18-inch versus the C-band analog.
Okay. Well, thanks very much.
All right. Other questions are welcome. 333-WILL, toll-free, 800-222-WILL. Let's talk about digital television. It seems that, you know, we've talked about this in the past, and people have read about the fact that essentially the nation is supposed to convert by a certain date, and the broadcaster is going to be broadcasting in digital, and we're all going to get great TV, and yada, 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 except for the fact that The sets are continue to be very expensive, and people are not running out to buy them, in part because they say there's nothing to watch. The broadcasters have to spend a lot of money to convert, and they say, well, why should we convert? Because there aren't that many people that have the TVs, so we got that deal going in here. And now it's beginning to look like, in fact, that the deadlines that had been set, chances are that ain't going to happen, and who knows when, in fact, it's going to happen.
Somehow the electronics industry in this country and the government always seem to get themselves tied up in knots. And first of all, if you've been in Chicago recently, looked on top of the Sears Tower, you've noticed a lot of changes. Those two big horns now look like they've sprouted baby horns all around them, little things sprouting. They've spent millions of dollars on top of Sears Tower to provide stations with spaces for digital transmitting, digital antenna broadcast, because there wasn't space before, which is one of the reasons that slowed the Chicago market down. Same thing's going on in New York at the World Trade Center. They've had to spend millions just putting up the towers, the elements for these transmitters, the antenna elements. So in major markets, that's been a major problem, is just finding space to transmit from the highest point. And then you have these TV broadcasters who, of course, converting millions of dollars into their transmitters and their studio equipment, and they're thinking, wait a second, advertisers aren't willing to pay anymore, whether we're doing this in high definition or in regular definition. The advertisers want to pay more. They're not going to reach any more eyeballs or ears than they've been reaching. And so most of these stations say, well, we'll use the digital channel, and we'll continue broadcasting a conventional, a standard definition signal, which is a hair better than what we see now on analog television, and we'll rent out the other four channels or use them for other programming. One public television station said, well, we're going to sell one of our five channels, and they're going to do commercial broadcasting on it. Now, that may not look too good to the – well, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting raised a few eyebrows about it, but it's a very gray area in the law because if you're providing your non-commercial primary program service, nobody said anything about the other opportunities. I mean, you can do it on the Internet, for example. If you're a public station, you can run commercials on the Internet if you want. WILO could run ads on its Internet programming. It's just not on its broadcast programming. So it's a very strange situation. Some experts I've spoken with fairly recently say that the digital TV system we've chosen is terribly flawed. I don't know if I agree with that. It's a very controversial issue. Some people say it's flawed. Some people say it's fantastic. They spent 10 years trying to get it right. Whether they have or not, the issue is apparently it wouldn't have any effect down here in Champaign-Urbana, but in major markets like Chicago and New York, is multipath. Apparently, multipath reception is worse than they predicted. RCA has been spending thousands of dollars trying to disprove this by setting up demonstrations around the country. They took me for one in Indianapolis and tried to force a signal to bounce off a building and receive it from a conventional rabbit ear antenna. Looked fine to me. So it depends who you believe. There's one broadcaster on the East Coast who just has been going to court every other week trying to get the government to change the standard. Needless to say, the public is not real enthused about buying into something that could change the standards. So what most of the manufacturers are doing now is coming out with sets that have all the circuitry necessary to display the picture, but not the receiving end, which is the part they would change. So you buy these sets for $2,000 or $3,000 and have to go out and buy a $500 tuner to receive digital television. That's their solution. Well, if it changes in a few years, just put a new tuner in. You don't have to throw away the whole set. I just think that I even wonder, and here I am, Mr. Electronics Junkie, Mr. Every Development's Wonderful. Do we need high definition? I love the widescreen. That's the part I love the most. You can get that on DVD. A fellow named Eve Ferrugia about 10 years ago proposed a system which was ignored, taking the conventional TV system and making some dramatic improvements within the conventional TV system that would have given broadcast television the same quality as what a good DVD looks like. And it would cost the stations, compared to HD, a fraction of the cost, and it would have cost about $200 to enhance the home receiver with these modifications. And it would have given us great pictures. Everybody would have been happy, low cost, but they decided to go for digital television. Well, the issue with digital television is, of course, the profit potential of these extra channels, because each digital channel can have five standard definition channels. So you can send out internet streaming from one of your channels. You can send out paging from another channel. You don't have to use it for television, as long as you're broadcasting a television picture on one of your channels. The other issue is that all these new cellular phone services are coming down the pike. They're starting in Europe, and they're going to be here in the next 2 years. And they need new bandwidth for all these cell phone and wireless internet services. And the deal the TV stations made with the government was they would get these new digital TV channels for free if they promised to convert by the year 2006 to strictly digital television and relinquish their analog channels. So I'm not sure what the allocations are here in Champaign-Urbana, but just let's say Channel 3 suddenly got Channel 30. And so they would get to keep Channel 30, but they have to give up Channel 3 in 2006. And now the broadcast is saying, well, we don't really want to do that. And the government's saying, but you made this deal. And the cell phone people are jumping up and down saying, we want to provide all these new profitable services, and we don't have bandwidth. We don't have a channel to broadcast them on. We don't have the frequencies that are available. They're even yelling at the military now to give up frequencies to provide these services. So this is getting another hot political debate over who owns the public airwaves and how they're going to be used and for what services. And the next 10 years, I'd much rather talk about CD, SACD, than what's going to happen with television broadcasting. And it's going to be really rough on public TV stations since they can't sell advertising, although some may be trying, and these enhanced underwriting credits. But the cost to public broadcasting to convert to digital is much worse in respect to the total overall budget than to the commercial broadcaster in most cases. So it's going to be a very interesting period of time.
We have another caller, and about 6 or 7 minutes left here with Rich Warren. We'll talk next with a caller here on line number one. Hello.
Hi. I have a question, and I'd like to make a comment, I guess. I have, I think it's a fairly big TV, and I see the broadcast at Channel 12 as I think it's in that higher definition format. And it looks really sharp on my regular old TV. Is that possible?
Well, let's put it this way. Channel 12 does not yet broadcast in high definition. It's still conventional broadcasting. However, some stations, if they have a good chief engineer like WILL does, and take the care, can broadcast a very good quality conventional signal. Not all TV stations are created equal. Some are very sloppy. Some really don't care about the quality of their studio links, etc. And so it all depends on the station. Now, there's a maximum quality they can broadcast, but within a certain area, there are differences between TV stations. So, yes, you can see better quality on some stations like Channel 12, but it's not high definition or digital. It's just simply more care is taken on the studio end and on keeping the transmitter properly tuned to give you the best quality picture on the air, but it's not a digital or high definition broadcast.
Well, I guess that was my comment. How much is high definition TV needed in that? I'm sure in my area, I'm down here around Lovington. Doesn't really matter where I go, closer or farther away from the station. It doesn't seem like they're even broadcasting all the information that, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, that is a problem with conventional broadcasting, is that broadcasters don't always make the effort to give you every bit of signal, every bit of quality that is possible within the current system. Now, if you go see a good high-definition broadcast, and I have, they are impressive. Mm-hmm. You really do see a difference. However, what I object to is if you compare high-definition broadcasting to a very good DVD displayed on a very good TV, you don't see as great a difference.
Mm-hmm.
I think the public would have been very happy with DVD-quality broadcast over the air. That is, in the 500 to 600 line area rather than the extended high-definition quality.
Yeah,
and
people tell a difference.
So, there's a broad, and of course broadcasters can also say broadcast three digital channels within their digital channel and have a DVD quality broadcast but not high definition.
Mm-hmm.
They have a whole different range, and the TV automatically adjusts, so you don't have to do anything. It's passive on your part. The TV says, oh, they're doing this, automatically switches in that mode of reception. And there are several modes in that. I don't want to get into the interlaced versus progressive versus 720 lines versus 400. There's a whole range of things the TV can receive. And every digital television has to be able to receive all of these different standards. So that's built in. You don't pay extra for it. It doesn't really cost extra to do it. It's just a matter of the TV getting the signal and saying, this is what it is, and displaying it to you. So that may be, we may end up with digital television, but not only on rare occasions, high definition. For example, they did on Golden Pond Live on CBS the other night. Well, maybe they would reserve that for high definition. This would be a show that would be worthy of high definition. Or NFL football. You'd watch the Super Bowl, which already has been transmitted in high definition. Those are things worthy of perhaps that system, but the average TV show probably would be in standard definition. It just wouldn't make a difference. I mean, Everybody Loves Raymond wouldn't make a difference in high definition. That's just the way it is, really.
Yeah, I agree. Well, thank you.
All right, thank you. And now, what are you looking at as a ballpark figure for a set that would be capable of showing a high-definition picture?
Well, there aren't some on the market now for about $2,500. So they've really come down in price. But also, those are conventional, the 4:3 aspect ratio. So when you watch a true high definition, it'll be letterboxed, usually, because of the widescreen, because it does cost more to make a widescreen tube or a widescreen projector system. So if you want widescreen, you end up paying in the $3,000 area where they start for the widescreen. I recommend widescreen because that's the one place it makes a difference. You watch a movie, you see it the way the director intended it. And a few TV shows, if you noticed ER for a while last fall, was broadcasting in widescreen. There'd be bands on top and bottom of the picture. They were just trying to see if anybody reacted to it. It wasn't high definition. It was just they wanted to see people's reaction to this kind of widescreen picture. Of course, people didn't like the bands on top and bottom of their TV, which you wouldn't have in a widescreen set. But these are the things that are up for discussion.
We'll try to squeeze one more real quick here. Our toll-free line, number 4. Hello.
Hi. I have a 12-year-old Mitsubishi VCR. You mentioned earlier that you think the VCRs are only going to last another 5 years or so. Is there any kind of preventive maintenance I can do between now and 5 years from now?
Well, find a good technician. I know David usually has one on his show, but he's more or less closed down most of his business except on Saturdays.
Yeah.
And have it cleaned and adjusted and oiled about once a year. Cleaning is very important.
Uh-huh.
And just make sure that most parts don't need lubrication. They're usually lubricated for life. But just have it cleaned and adjusted so all the belts are the right tension and the cogs are all meshing properly. And you might be able to eke another several years of life out of it.
Yeah. Oh, it works fine. It's just that, I was thinking about buying another one because it is getting old. But since you say they're all going to disappear in 4 years, I thought maybe I better do something to this one. Okay, thanks very much.
All right, thanks. Well, we'll leave it at that for this time around with the promise, I'm sure, that sometime again soon, Rich will come back. In the meantime, if you're here in our area, you can look for his columns in the News Gazette and also elsewhere in some of the
Sound and Vision.
Sound and Vision at your local newsstand. And, by the way, he's the host of a little show called The Midnight Special.
Yes, that's right. On Friday nights here on WILL at 11 or on WFMT in Chicago, Saturday nights at 9.
Yeah. And coming up sometime, I think fairly soon, also Rich will be on the Afternoon Magazine with Celeste Quinn to talk about his other big major area of interest, that is singer-songwriters, folk music, and so forth.
Harriet tells me I think it's May 9th.
All right. So not very long. Well, thanks very much.
My pleasure.
We appreciate it.